We can talk about
big picture. Courtroom.
We can talk about big
heart of the rivalry.
We can talk about big picture Michigan culture and it all just falling apart the last 5 years too.
I think
there's
a
bigger story.
I think we do have to address that on the heart of the rivalry. We're gonna, you know, get right into it. This is a show I think we often provide a lot of levity, right? College football's a fun and goofy sport in a lot of ways. And we get serious, we talk about the business, but now we've crossed the line into gravity. So this is the heart of the rivalry. This is the Blades College Football Show that covers four paragons of college football in Bowling Green and Toledo, Ohio State, and Michigan. And we wonder about the gleam on their beacon. He is Toledo Blade sports columnist Dave Briggs. I am photographer and producer Phil Kaplan. Most people know, but it frayed quite a bit, but try to give us a synopsis of the departure of Sherrone Moore from the University of Michigan.
Yeah. I mean, where do you... Yeah, Wednesday was an all-timer in the surreal world of college football. First, we learned mid-afternoon that Sherrone Moore, Michigan's second-year coach, is fired for, quote, an inappropriate relationship with a staffer. We learned and there had been long swirling rumors of this, and I believe it had been kind of investigated by Michigan in passing over the summer even. But according to what prosecutors later told us, and it's never good when you're talking about prosecutors, there had been a multiple-year relationship, Sherrone Moore and his executive assistant, allegedly. An executive assistant that, according to public records, went from making $55,000 in 2024 to making $90,000 in 2025. So it's a little bit of a red flag, a $35,000.
You gotta be good at your job, Dave.
Yeah, no, for sure. We find out on Wednesday.
And that is not an allegedly. That is...
Yeah, it's public records, sure. We find out Wednesday around 4 that Sherrone Moore's been fired for the inappropriate relationship, and that's an absolute stunner, and yet somehow the story only spirals, and spiraling doesn't even do enough lifting for what happened next. We find out, we're laughing because it's... Not because it's funny, because we're just trying to process how... absurd
to
and
keep
bizarre
from crying because it's so crazy
sad it is. It's crazy. Then we find out he's the suspect in a alleged assault. He's being detained at the Washtenaw County Jail. As the prosecutors later alleged, he broke into that woman's house who allegedly was having the relationship with. He gets out a the details are crazy. As he gets out a butter knife, he threatens to kill himself. He tells the girl, "You've ruined my life." Just as dark of a spiral as you could ever imagine. And yeah, just a sad and stunning fall from grace. And I was talking to you and some other people. It's like as crazy as this seems in the moment that the Michigan coach began the day preparing for a bowl game and ends the day sitting in jail, I still don't know if we... can fully appreciate in the moment just how completely bonkers this is. Like, I feel like 5 years from now we'll be like, wow, that was even more incredible and sad than it even felt in the moment, because it's hard to process it. We've never quite seen anything like this at Ohio State or Michigan.
You just think about the image of him doing that video arraignment.
Yeah, just a sad, like, broken person.
The way that you woke up one day versus 24 hours, how you wake up the next day, that is a brutal fall from grace. Not to put Sherrone Moore up front, obviously his wife and kids, and this assistant who has been rolled along with it. There's tragedies anywhere you can look, but with all of that, and under the entire umbrella of allegedly, that is fine. So all of that, with everything else that has surrounded Michigan, both in the immediate and sort of intermediate history, Dave, is Michigan a dirty program?
It is crazy when you look at the culture of Michigan football the last 5 years. I think back to, I guess it was Jim Harbaugh at Media Day in 2021. You know, obviously at that point, he's yet to beat Ohio State. Poor record in the big games. Has a very good program, but trying to push it over the hump, go from good to great. And he said at that press conference, you know, we're going to beat Ohio State or win the Big Ten, or, quote, we're going to die trying. And they started trying. No, they started beating Ohio State, and they won the national championship. But wow, at what cost? They ultimately kind of burned the place to the ground here. And at some point, I mean, a culture of the school is what you're willing to tolerate. And at some point, you have to ask, like, is it time to completely clean house? I don't understand how Ward Manuel, the athletic director, still has a job. There's been a lot of scandal around the athletic department, also a lot of success. But, you know, Michigan has always liked to think of itself, the Block M stands for something more than just the blind pursuit of victory. Michigan Man mythology. And I think for a lot of years, you know, I mean, that was certainly embraced, and there was some truth to that. A lot of truth to the ideals they pursued. But yeah, I mean, if you just look at the football program alone, I mean, just the Matt Weiss thing with he's the offensive coordinator arrested for 24 federal, indicted on 24 federal counts of cyber fraud and identity theft. And he was allegedly prying into thousands of student athletes' data to get, you know, intimate photos and just crazy, just appalling behavior. And then you look at they hire Bo Schembechler's son without a background check, and then they find out he made some racist posts on social media. And it's like, oh, well, what's a background check between friends? They have to backtrack on that. No need to, you know, get back into the cheating or recruiting allegations and violations. But the NCAA basically said Harbaugh ran a rogue program that didn't really care about the rules at all. And there's that. And now this, it's just, it's crazy. I mean, I thought the Sharon Moore hire was very questionable from the start. Didn't know it would be this spectacular of a disaster, but this just kind of recasts into light if it's kind of crazy somebody this unhinged was leading the program. And yeah, when it all adds up, where is the buck going to stop? Are they going to, again, the culture is what you're tolerating, what you're willing to tolerate, and they're sure willing to tolerate a lot here.
So speaking of that level of tolerance, there's some sort of endurance associated with tolerance. Both MLive and the Detroit News are reporting that this relationship was essentially an open secret,
yeah,
sort of widely right. known yeah. in the program.
Right.
If that's what's tolerated out and up front, you right. wonder about how bad. And all people are people, and around power, they can go astray, and even people at the top of the program might not know about something going on beneath them.
Right.
If that's your argument for Connor Stallions, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but that could happen at any program. But when the, essentially, like the highest paid guy yeah. in the state,
right.
right, is leading that kind of lifestyle,
yeah.
seemingly pretty flippant, he's got yeah. a number of exposed text threads with online models. It just, yeah, I think the best thing you do if you're in a position to clean house, you clean house. Even if you love Ward Manuel.
Yeah.
Right. You have to get rid of everything and say, look, yeah. we're starting over. I don't
Absolutely.
Know. I don't know what else you could do to reinstill some faith in your fan base, in your recruits, in your right. current players. What about Bryce Underwood?
Right.
He's looking like an LSU Tiger.
Sorry. Above all, the biggest tragedy is for Sharon Moore's family, obviously married father of three, having to be dragged through this. It's obviously no one, they did not sign up for this, to say the least. I think the most uncomfortable question here, and acknowledging the relationship was an open secret in some circles, or else why would everybody with access to the internet or a message board have heard these rumors, is that if Sharon Moore had beaten Ohio State, if he was winning more games, would we be here today? Or would this have just been like, oh, he's acting completely inappropriately, but oh, well, it's major college football. This is, we're winning big. I think that's absolutely a fair question. I think we're allowed to be cynical in this landscape. And a lot of coaches, there's a lot of things you can technically fire coaches for. They're not always fired for them if things are going well.
I want to just let you, as we enter this speculative hypothetical space, just want to be clear that this is a hypothetical speculative space.
So loosey-goosey podcast.
Had he won,
yeah,
of course, that's a much larger panacea.
Right.
But also, had he not just totally crashed out,
yeah,
if he'd have been fired and just went home and ate his hand,
sure,
you know, maybe called Ime Udoka.
Right.
Oh, for he'd be some advice.
He'd be fine and sit out this year and get a good offensive coordinator job.
Look at Rick Pitino. Look at Bobby Petrino. Look, Lane Kiffin is sitting there going,
sure,
you can't do that.
Right.
You know, I mean, so
I'd go even further than that, and I'd say Ohio State fans would do the same. If they had gone 12-0 this year and he was fired for an inappropriate relationship, fans would absolutely be, was that wrong? I mean, kind of George Costanza, oh, I'm sorry, was that wrong? I mean, I think he deserves another chance here. What's the problem?
It's true.
So, but yeah, no, it's just, but yeah, it's, it went from a sad story to a dark and yeah. It's just,
well, let's put on the rose colored glasses.
Okay.
How does this galvanize your team for a bowl game against Texas, right? What is the silver lining here for the future of your program? Or is it just, are we too close to the wound to even see those things? Biff Poggi, that's a silver lining.
Yeah. There's no silver lining for this year. I think they're going to get smoked in the bowl game.
Biff Poggi?
By Texas, a Biff Poggi. Can you imagine if Biff, we're recording this on Monday, so Michigan might have a new coach by the time you... this comes out, but
you don't think they're gonna ride with Biff?
Yeah, they might. That would be
that
would be pathetic. And it would you're gonna hire the guy who was kind of Harbaugh's right hand man at the end of the Harbaugh era to coach the team. That would really tell you you're serious about a new culture. But Jed Fish, the Washington coach, is the betting favorite now. Few coaches have probably used the Michigan job for a little leverage. Kenny Dillingham would have been my top choice at Arizona State, well, along with Kalen DeBoer at Alabama. Sounds like Dillingham is signing a big new deal to stay home in Arizona. And Kalen DeBoer, despite almost all Alabama fans wanting him fired, he might get a freaking extension at Alabama because of the Michigan job. Just so... I don't know. Yeah. Well,
those are DeBoer, what they call that, market forces.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's, I mean, think about how many coaches Penn State got raises. I mean, that was, Cignetti, Jeff Brohm, Mike Elko at A&M. So it's going to be a similar deal with Michigan. Bad timing for a search to happen. I think Matt Campbell would have been the obvious top candidate who would have, I'm sure, if he's going to take the Penn State job, I'm sure he would have loved to go to Michigan. So, poor timing for Michigan, bad situation all around, and I don't know if there are any silver linings here, other than you probably will upgrade as head coach regardless.
It is, I mean, even with this, it's a coveted job. I mean, and that's what makes the situation so sad. Also, you have a guy who's
basically
been handed a dream job.
Right,
and
born
and
on third base.
Flushes it away. He was born on third base, I guess. You could say that. You could say that now.
Where is he now?
Sharon Moore?
Yeah. Is he just, I mean, what is he?
I don't know if he's still, I don't know if he's still in Saline. I don't know.
No, I mean, he's, if he was born on third base, is he?
He's in a, he's this, being run down in a pickle.
Yeah.
He's being run, and he's out.
Between home and first base.
He's out, and then they discover he has pine tar all over his pants, and he's ejected.
Oh, my.
it's a tough story to talk
about. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because you want to make some jokes, but not. You don't want to make jokes it's sad. It's more sad than anything.
But it's also so crazed.
Yeah. Okay. No, you don't want to make jokes. You can make it the jokes. I'll be the serious person.
Yeah, you're definitely you're the straight man. Given the court reporter brief, you're Doug Llewellyn for today. No, that's a deep cut joke for my People's Court fans. God. Okay, this episode of The Heart of the Rivalry, not the People's Court, is brought to you by Renewal by Anderson and Dale's Bar and Grill in Maumee. Renewal by Anderson, the window replacement experts backed by over 120 years of quality and craftsmanship from consultation to installation. Renewal by Anderson makes upgrading your home easy, beautiful, and worry-free. And of course, Dale's Bar and Grill in Maumee, whether you're looking for a table for the whole family or just a bar stool to catch the game, Dale's has you covered with a full menu of sandwiches, wraps, and salads. Combine that with 21 beers on tap, and there's something everyone can enjoy. We thought that this might be a stretch show. What are we going to do here with this middle show? We're not quite to a bowl game. And we have one coach in one of our programs ousted in chaotic, spectacular, comet bursting in the atmosphere fashion. And we're welcoming Mike Jacobs, who I met at the airport to take his pictures. He got off a chartered plane. There's our man. There's Mike Jacobs from Mercer. Give us the Topps baseball card, Topps football card summary of who Mike Jacobs is and what is he instilling before the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans.
Right. Yeah. Talk about...
I nailed that.
Talk about bad timing for... just an absolute home run hire comes out on Wednesday, and then the Michigan news comes out Wednesday afternoon to totally steal their thunder. But as we've had time, nothing can steal the thunder of this hire. It's that good. Some hires feel like a home run. This feels like a grand slam under the upper deck. If you were going to pick a guy to lead Toledo out of if you were gonna make your coach in your Madden Dynasty mode, this is the guy I would create. I mean, 46-year-old Maumee graduate. His father was a longtime great assistant coach, including at Toledo 1979 under Chuck Stobart. Went on to West Virginia and Ohio State, big time offensive coordinator. His son, walk on at Ohio State, then goes into the coaching profession and has a meteoric rise in 10 seasons at the Division I and II level. I believe he's 94-23, and among coaches, among active head coaches at the D1 and D2 level with at least 8 seasons, he has the 4th best all-time win percentage. And I'll read you the guys who are in the mix here of the coaches with the best win percentage.
Are you reading your own column?
I am reading my own column. This is
self-referential. What happens at this level.
Number one, Ryan Day. 682-11 for an 882 winning percentage.
Not bad.
I've heard of him. Number two, Kalen DeBoer, Alabama, 124-19 over his tenure. A lot of success at the FCS level. Number three, Kirby Smart. And number four, Mike Jacobs. And number five, Kurt Cignetti. So
that's some... So that's the
decent company. Top five are Ryan Day, Kalen DeBoer, Kirby Smart, Kurt Cignetti, and our own University of Toledo's Mike Jacobs. Winners win. He's won at every level and not so easy jobs. His first job was at Notre Dame College in suburban Cleveland. That's a former women's college that only started a football program a couple decades ago,
and it's like a movie script.
And it has since closed. It was kind of hanging on for dear life, but he immediately comes in, turns a losing program around, goes 42-8, builds him into a D2 power. And
his last, the women's college?
Yeah, at the former women's college. And the last job, then he goes to Lenoir Ryan in North Carolina, and his recent job, Mercer, the Division I FCS level. They had a 72-year hiatus of their football program before bringing it back in 2013. So again, not an easy job, and he's just an absolute monster there too. Wins their first one. It was there 2 years. wins the conference title last year, runs it back this year. Just a winner.
Didn't they give Alabama a game? Maybe not this year.
Mercer will play Alabama and usually lose by 70.
They're
one of those teams that the week before the Iron Bowl usually is the sacrificial lamb for Auburn or Alabama. But
no Mercer.
Yeah. But yeah, no, they're he's a winner. He certainly knows this area well, and I love the energy he brought to the introductory press conference too. I mean, he said all the right things about building a tough, together team that's, you know, gonna be great on and off the field and 314 days in Ann Arbor, Michigan. No, he did not say that, but he is an Ohio State grad. Played for Cooper and Tressel.
Toledo boy, Ohio State grad.
Yeah,
worked his way up some difficult lineage.
Pretty cool.
And
I think the coolest things he said in the press conference were he's all in on the Bowling Green rivalry. I think it's kind of fans, there's a little angst around Toledo the last few years as I think Toledo's lost 4 of the last 7 games against Bowling Green, all as favorites, all with a significantly better roster. I think there was maybe some questions whether they need to reprioritize how they think about the rivalry. For Bowling Green, it was kind of built up as, you know, their Super Bowl of the regular season. They put everything into it. They treated it like Ohio State, Michigan.
And it was their last win of the year.
No, they beat UMass.
Oh, that's right.
Their last Division I win of the year. Oh, wait, I guess UMass is Division I. Oh, they're in the MAC. Okay. That's kind of crazy.
Okay.
But yeah, so he said all in on that. It's not just another game, which is ironic because his former coach at Ohio State, John Cooper, was scorned for treating Michigan like another game at the end. But yeah, they will. They're going to be all in on that, and they're all in on the biggest expectations. He twice mentioned the college football playoff in the opening press conference. I think a lot of coaches shy from expectations, just maybe as a defense mechanism in case you don't get there or whatever. He sprinted toward the Crucible and said the college football playoffs is the destination. That's where we're going. And it's going to depend on the buy-in from the community and the players of how fast we're getting there, but that's where we're going. And I asked him afterward off to the side, like, you know, why say that? It's a lot of that's swinging for the moon there and kind
put
of
a target on yourself,
putting it out there. And he said, why not? Why not put it out there? You got to have scary goals to, you know, get the best out of your team and or else you're going to get complacent. And the way Toledo's investing in our football program, that's in line where our goals should be. And I think that's awesome. I mean, you look at, he did more with less at his previous jobs. Now he has the chance to do more with more. Toledo has the kind of written about they're uniquely situated in the MAC. They might not have the best practice complex in the MAC. It's good, probably 4th, 5th, 6th in the league, but they have the best of everything else. The best stadium, the best fan and corporate support, the best operational investment, and now the most invested in the revenue sharing era. So I think relative, and they're located in a football hotbed. So relative to the rest of the league, Toledo is incredibly situated. And once you're situated well in your league, that means you're situated to be one of the top G6 programs. So I think it's a realistic goal. And I think it's great he's putting it out there. No sense in aspiring to anything less.
If not Tulane and James Madison, why not Toledo?
Yeah. And I don't think this James Madison team that's going to the playoff is more talented than the Toledo roster we saw this year. So
When I watch that first game, I'll be putting my Toledo glasses over top of James Madison's uniforms.
Yeah. They certainly got way better results. I just don't know if they're more talented.
Talk about Jeremiah Smith getting shafted on the Biletnikoff Award. really?
So he's named Jeremiah Smith, named the best receiver in the Big Ten, but not the best receiver in the country, losing out to another player in the Big Ten.
I don't understand that. Now the kid from
USC
Malachi.
Yeah, he's great. He's a great player,
without a doubt.
Yeah,
but how does that work?
I don't know how that works.
Okay. Okay. So this final preview.
I'm not a voter. I'm a voter, but I didn't vote.
Just because we talk about college football and he covers it for a living doesn't mean he knows anything about it.
It's true.
It's fair.
The All-Americans did come out today, and Emmanuel McNeil Warren from Toledo is an AP All-American.
First or second?
Third team. I voted him first team. I know a few others did.
Once you're All-America, baby, don't matter.
No, absolutely. Yeah. He's only the 11th All-American in University of Toledo history, joining Quinyon Mitchell was the most recent one.
Just gonna
but
say.
Only a couple in the last 20 years, so pretty cool.
Quinyon went first round?
He did. I think E-Man's going to be top two rounds, and I think he's going to be an absolute star in the NFL. Cool to see. And I believe Jeremiah Smith did get first-team AP All-American, though.
Oh.
So that's a nice consolation prize.
Sure. Yeah. You think they just gave it to him? Here you go, kid.
Haven't really heard of you.
Oh, the award season of college football. And Dave's expertise, of course, brought to you by Renewal by Anderson and Dale's Bar and Grill in historic Uptown Maumee. Catch all the college football action as well as NFL playoffs at Dale's, one of the premier Buckeye bars in Northwest Ohio. Wolverines still welcome, despite everything. No, I'm just kidding. Did you see Uncle Phil out there in the NFL this weekend? Did you watch that field goal fest between the Colts and the Seahawks?
Oh, no.
It was pretty cool to see him go out there and almost get it done.
Did you see he coaches the high school team. Did you see his players back home in Alabama just going nuts for him? That was a pretty awesome scene.
It was. That is why we love sports.
I know.
So we're also brought to you by Renewal by Anderson. If you're ready to transform your home with Renewal by Anderson, buy one window or door and get another 40% off, but only through the end of the year. Schedule your free consultation today at renewalbyanderson.com.
Toledo, of course, will lose plenty of guys in the transition, as any school would, but they're all in for one last ride, and Coach Rob Wiener is a guy who, just like Jason Candle, inspires a ton of loyalty. They love playing for him. They want one last ride together. And everybody, pretty much, including E-Man, Emmanuel McNeil Warren, is planning to play in the game. I don't know about Tucker Gleason, the quarterback. He was in street clothes today. I stopped by practice. He kind of went down with a concussion in their final game, so I don't know about him, but everybody who can play will be out there, and Louisville will be a tough challenge, but it'll at least be fun to watch. This isn't an operation in chaos, which it very easily could have been.
You have said on our previous show that you would not take Toledo to defeat Louisville.
I would not.
Even now.
That'll be a tough road to hoe.
Give us a score.
As the kids say.
Is that what the kids in the agrarian slang these days?
Yeah. Give me the score. Probably Louisville 24, Toledo 6-7. No, I just wanted to do the. Now I was just thinking of the
The show's over.
Old man doing the kids thing, like the. Did you see the idiot? College football playoff selection committee chair making the 6-7 joke on the broadcast, and it's just like, wow, this could not be less of a serious operation. He was asked, like, are you gonna move? Why was Ole Miss moved from 6-7 and he did 6-7? And Reese didn't even get the joke at first, and so it was just awkward 2 seconds of silence. But anyway, my prediction would probably be 24-17. Louisville. I think Toledo will keep it close. They always play well in these big games, and they'll be motivated. They'll wanna make a statement, but I think Louisville just has a little bit too much.
Awkward score here, Dave. I'm saying 18-15.
Okay.
Toledo or Louisville, but that's the score.
Okay.
It's an 18-15.
16-17. Yeah.
It's supposed to mean that it's average, right? 6-7.
I don't know. I don't.
6-7.
Okay. I was gonna ask you, what is it supposed to mean, but that makes the sound even older and more ridiculous.
Low Kirk, it means average.
Okay.
He's Dave Briggs. I'm Phil Kaplan. This is our last show of the year. Yeah. We'll be back. We're gonna follow the
What's your Ohio State Miami prediction?
I think they are gonna play Miami.
Yeah.
And I think that's gonna be a tough game.
I think
Ohio State wins, but I think it's like a 24-20
touchdown. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably their closest game of the year. You know, since Texas, I guess.
Since the field goal game against Indiana.
Well, I'm not even counting that.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, that makes sense.
13-10. They have to lose 13-10. That's what Rockets.